Good evening. This is Milton Rosenberg. Welcome again to Extension 720.
Good evening. This is Milton Rosenberg. We welcome you again to Extension 720.
Good evening. This is Milton Rosenberg. Welcome again to Extension 720. Hello to all. This is Milton Rosenberg.
We'll talk about that tonight on Extension 720.
Extension 720 here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, who will be on the air with you until 10 o'clock tonight. 312-981-7200. A very special Extension 720. And by special, I mean it just wasn't a thing a couple hours ago, but the Sox doubleheader rained out, so we got called in. Pete Zimmerman's here. David Jennings is here. Got a good show lined up. We started making some calls, and we're going to talk about some things that are important to you here in the Chicago area. Like I said, 312-981-7200. We can do that, or we could just play old 70s and 80s All-Star Game throwbacks as a good rain delay slash rain postponement is used to doing. I still feel like there's a place for that. They were just showing on WGN TV some old Cubs highlights. I think they're kind of going through the nostalgia of the fact that this is their last broadcast, and it was funny to see all those shots. And the minute I saw it, I automatically was like, yes, yes, they're doing rain delay stuff. Then I realized that's Cubs. Rain delay would be Sox.
I looked over and I saw the classic Ray Sanchez pop-up when Harry Carey says, oh, he'll easy pop. He'll never miss that one. And he dropped it, and he started, Harry Carey started laughing because the guy dropped it. Oh, he dropped it. It was great.
Yeah. You know, I wish we'd see a day where there'll be another Harry Carey, only for the fun that my dad showed me at Wrigley Field, where you could actually see the back of Harry's head from one of the I'm sure Wrigley Field's been renovated in whatever forms, but when you were on the ramps, and, you know, most of the time you're up on the upper deck when you were a kid, you know, sort of going to Wrigley Field, but there was one little spot where you could go, and my dad would go, hey, Harry! And he would always wave back. Even on the air, he's on the broadcast, he'd wave back. He knew that someone had figured out the system, figured out exactly, one person figured out how to get to see Harry's head. That was my dad. So always fond memories when I see those old clips and Harry Carey, you know, for that reason, just for the fact that he would wave backwards at us. Like I said, 312-981-7200. We're also paying attention to the weather tonight, of course.
And we just got a new warning. This is a severe thunderstorm warning for Lake County in Indiana until 8:40 tonight.
Yep, a little thunderstorm warning and severe weather coming through the area. We got you back. David's got you keyed in. And if we get some really severe weather, we make sure that you know about it right away. That's the way it works here on WGN Radio. You know that. And we'll have much to do and keep you up to date in all the newscasts that, of course, are at the top and bottom of the hour. Tonight, what do you want to talk about? I know what I want to talk about. I want to talk about Chicago. I want to talk about Chicago's budget. Fascinating conversation that Rokan had earlier about, she had with 80 Quig from Cranes, about what kind of impact the teachers' union, the idea that they're going to authorize a strike, what kind of impact a new contract would have on the bottom line to the city of Chicago. And it makes you think, oh, yeah, that's right. We had a mayor go front and center on, what was it, just at the end of August, right? In the first primetime speech, kind of push back some of my favorite CBS shows. Hey, Magnum P.I. is not on.
Your priorities.
Yeah, what happened to Magnum P.I.?
It's on Sundays now. Got moved. Yeah.
I'm glad that you know where Magnum P.I. is at all times.
I don't watch it, but I know where it is.
You're just an idiot savant when it comes to wherever they move the CBS shows.
No, it's just that there are some other shows on Sunday that I watch.
Got it. Okay. Well, we heard from her that this was going to be a trying time, and there was going to be a lot of sort of rolling up the sleeves, and we all were going to have a shared sacrifice. And so I wonder what that means for negotiations for a CPS contract and why it's not getting done. And so there are some questions about what's at the core. So I'm going to talk a little bit with Matt Martin about that. Matt Martin, one of the freshman aldermen. You call him freshman alderman, rookie alderman, 47th Ward. Ed Kelly's old ward on the northwest side, Lincoln Square, Ravenswood area. But also, I want to talk about the Progressive Caucus came up with their budget priorities. They sent them around today about what they want to see in this next budget. And it made me think about, you know, if you think back to the election time here in Chicago, there was a lot made of how progressive candidates and progressive incumbents, meaning Scott Wagesback and others who were in the city council, they pushed for Lori Lightfoot. They were all about Lori Lightfoot. The whole concept, you could really look at a blueprint of how we came to this historic point to elect Lori Lightfoot based on what the Progressive Caucus was doing to make it happen. And so the question is now their ranks swelled. They are one of the more powerful caucuses in city council. And you really think about it, that's amazing just from 5 years ago when there were, what, a handful, five or six so-called, quote-unquote, progressive aldermen. Now there's, what, 20-some-odd? I mean, they almost have a majority. So they put out their priorities. You got to listen. You know, that's the way it works. And I wonder if the mayor's going to listen. I wonder if the mayor now, who's been in there for a couple of months and realizes what is at stake when it comes to the budget, there is a big push in this progressive priority list to avoid any sort of property tax, to avoid taxes. I mean, they're kind of nitpicking on the taxes they want to see debt done, which is really just about services, which really is tax on us. So there's never been let's talk about the history of tax. And I want to make this clear to all politicians, because I don't think you recognize that we're not as dumb as you think we are. But when you say you're taxing services, you realize that means us. Because there never, in the history of tax, does a service provider go, I'll eat that. You know what? I'm not going to pass that on to you. I'm going to eat that. I'm an accountant. You know what? Thanks for the extra tax. I'm not going to pass it on to my customers. I trust them too. I respect them too much. What are you talking about? So when they get into these games and the progressive priorities, there was a lot made of, we're going to make sure that there's a fair tax on services like accounting and bookkeeping and tax prep. Like tax prep. Who does the taxes? We all do our taxes. So unless you're talking about, you know, when I was 22 years old, and I'm like, is it the blue form or the pink form? Most people have some sort of preparation, whether it's TurboTax or an accountant that does it at H&R Block. And that's that. When they say we're going to tax that, that H&R Block's not going to turn around and be like, you know what? You've been so good to me. I'm not going to raise tax. I'm going to eat it. You know what? That's on me. It's just not going to happen. So the idea that they're pretending like they're not taxing people, they're taxing services, that's hogwash. So we'll talk with Alderman Martin about what he thinks about both the upcoming possible teacher strike and what it's going to take to get that done. And then also, what kind of priorities the mayor is going to be interested in adapting from what the Progressive Caucus wants to see done. And that includes TIF reform. That includes a lot of different things that other mayors have balked on. We'll see if this mayor does adapt these because of their close relationship and the fact that this caucus helped the mayor get elected. That's a great political story. Much better than what's happening in Washington. The impeachment, we've seen that one before. It already happened. Late 90s, we saw impeachment. I don't want to see the sequel, Impeachment 2, Electric Boogaloo. But if you want to talk impeachment tonight, we can talk about that. There's a great great book that's coming out, and I'm trying to get Allison Stanger. She's a professor. She wrote a book about the history of whistleblowers and how whistleblowing is almost as American as apple pie. The whole concept going way back to even the beginnings of this country, and how whistleblowing is essentially how anything ever gets done or fixed. It's a fascinating book, and she's coming to Chicago, I think, in a week or two. So I'm going to try to get her on the program. But we can talk about everything that's happening in Washington. As you know, I had a grandiose idea to get Illinois lawmakers on to give us their position and what they think about impeachment. But as you can guess by just going to a simple Twitter search, each one of our lawmakers goes straight down party lines. There's not much insight that you're going to get from a Republican from the middle of the state or a Democrat from the west side of Chicago. They're pretty much going to make their case for whatever their party's going for. So I don't know if it's worth us spending any time or, you know, letting them sort of excise or exhale on air the same sort of hot air that they've been talking about for the last couple days. But if we want to talk about it, we can talk about it too. 312-981-72. I'm an open book tonight. We were not supposed to have a show. I love these days. It's kind of the fun part of doing talk radio is we get a chance to mix it up. So we'll do that coming up here. We'll take a break, and then we'll come back, and we'll get Matt Martin on the line, and we'll talk a little bit about Chicago's budget and progressive politics. Extension 720. Stay with us. Unfortunately, you know, you get these texts in, and I wish I could help in any form, but, you know, someone says, this is, I believe, an 815 or 773. It says, have you heard anything about the power outages in Beverly, in the southwest side, since this afternoon? And it's not unexpected, of course, as some of the severe weather comes through, but they can't really get any answer from power companies or anything about what's happening. And I'm sure that that's the case, and, you know, unfortunately, I think that that's probably something that is going to be widespread in the area in the next couple hours when you come to power outages. And not just power outages, but communication about power outages. Like, for instance, and I don't want to say that we're the same because you're going through, you know, power and everything, but my cable went out like 2 days ago. And, you know, cable today goes out, and it's internet and it's cable. My wife is texting me. We were here at work, and she's like, hey, you know, I rebooted it. What do I do? You know, can you call the Comcast? I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm at work. But then they at least Comcast will tell you, hey, there has been an outage when you call, and then they tell you when the time is, and then when that time is, you call back, and then there's a later time, and then there's a later time, and there's a later time. It ended up being something like 7 or 8 hours. And so my thought to you, Pete, is do I get a reimbursement on that? Do I get a refund? Does someone have an algorithm or a formula that takes 8 hours worth of internet time?
I think you will get a refund.
Yes.
You should get a refund. Do you have to ask for it?
Oh, I don't want to ask for it. I want it just directly given to me.
Or you can
just have the confrontation. It's good for the soul.
Or you can ask for the Red Zone channel for like 3 Sundays. For the next 3 Sundays, like, can I get the Red Zone channel?
Exactly. How about NFL Network? Why don't we give me 2 hours a day of the NFL Network? That's, I mean, it is. I don't really want it to do the confrontation part. That's the hard part, you know. But maybe that has to be done.
If this helps, we've got. I'm just looking at the ComEd map. There are outages in around the area just to the south of Harvey, just north of Altgeld Gardens, south mm-hmm. Deering, Burnside, Calumet Heights, Evergreen Park.
Yeah, and then you're going west, and now you're getting the Beverly area, yeah.
Where else? West, near West Garfield Road, West Garfield Boulevard, I should say, near South Ashland. Further south on Ashen, there are another couple. So yeah, we're starting to see that.
And there's going to be probably more as some of the severe weather still is to come tonight, and we're going to be paying attention to it here. So obviously it's a difficult situation for people who are without power, and if you're it feels weird, especially if you listen to the radio in your home and you don't have power for me to go. So just keep it here. WGN radio, but obviously people in cars and listening through other means can still hear us.
Now you know why Mom always said,
batteries.
Keep the batteries.
Right. My mom said, why do you always sleep so late?
I need my beauty sleep.
That's right. I know. I always gripe with my mom on this because when I was younger, and I don't mean like eight, she let me sleep when I was eight, but when I got to like teenage years, I worked at the grocery store, and the grocery store had this bad habit, which ended up being the corporate habit of understaffing and then calling in, so they try to get you on your day off. Like, that was the idea. It was someone's job, so I think they would show corporate, we're under the bottom line. But then during the day, they're like, hey, Justin, you got to come in, man. And the grocery store needs you. And so I got very aware of that. You know, so I would let the phone ring and let it go to voicemail or whatever when you're sleeping in your bed.
Answer machine.
Yeah. And then my mom would answer the phone, and then Lorraine from the service desk is like, yeah, we want to see if Justin come in. You know, he's sleeping. He should go to work. Knocking on my door. Justin, Lorraine's on the phone from Omni.
Oh, no.
I'm like, no, Mom, no. I was out last night. I was doing my poetry readings. So. I feel like that was something that we finally had to have a conversation about. Coming up a little bit later, we're going to talk about the South Side, but talk about South Side Food, restaurant group, if you will, that fine family at Franco's in Bridgeport. And they own a bunch of different restaurants, including a new one right at McCormick Place. Talk to them about what it takes to run a expansive restaurant business as part of our Download in Chicago business. We'll do that in the 8 o'clock hour with Frank Ruffalo, who is 26 years old, taken over from his parents. That'll be coming up in the 8 o'clock hour. In the 9 o'clock hour, we'll talk a little bit about animal testing and cosmetics. Elizabeth Alfano will join us, but this is an interesting story that we're seeing more and more. As the, obviously because of impeachment, everything got kind of tabled this week in the House, but there has been a push by the United States Congress to outlaw testing on animals when it comes to cosmetics and cosmetic companies. It's surprising because you would think that would have been done by now, but it has not. And as interesting, Illinois is one of only three states that has banned the practice in the state. But the federal government is looking to ban it as well, so we'll talk about that coming up on the program, which is it's one of those laws where you're like, seriously? There are 47 states and there's no federal law that says you can't drop chemicals in the eyes of puppies to see what happens? So I don't know. I don't know what I feel about that. So we'll see. We'll talk to that as well coming up. So tonight will be a fun night. We'll talk about animal testing. We'll talk about...
I want to hear more about Omni.
Yeah. Omni Stories. It's Omni Stories tonight on Extension 720. Yeah, I was surprised to read that. I read all about kind of animal testing and how it pertains to cosmetics. And it's something that I think that so many people of younger generations assumed was something of the past. You know, the idea like lipstick and you know, testing different chemicals on animals to see if they would harm humans. I would think that was, Pete, something in the past, right? Yeah. You would think that was something out of what we did in the 70s before we thought it was bad.
Mm-hmm.
And to look and see that the federal government doesn't actually have any law on the books and that there's only been three of the 50 states that has actually enacted a law saying you can't do it. And to know that the big cosmetic companies continue to do it. They may have like a controversy at one point or another, but what they do is they just kind of lay low and then they come back even fuller force. Not to mention the fact that most of them outsource to China. And China is a huge culprit when it comes to animal testing for cosmetics. Huge. I mean, they don't care. At least, I mean, I'm not saying that it's right, but in the United States, there seems to at least be a little bit of, I don't know, humane treatment, even though it's still testing. In China, they're like, no, most of our cosmetics here are bad. Most of our chemicals are bad. So let's kill the animals before we kill the humans. And it's just been a practice that has just been abhorrent. So talk about that as well. That's coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. So, yeah, I feel like that's enough. I feel like that's enough. We'll see if it's enough. If not, we'll get the 1979 All-Star game out. Right. We'll get the All-Star game out with Freddie Lynn's great performance. Or maybe we'll just go to baseballreference.com and just list all the 80s players that I possibly can, just for fun. Thanks, David. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. It's already working. We have a 773 texter who's wanted to know more about the outages on the southwest side of Chicago, and I got a little source from the text line that text in said they work for ComEd, and that there have been lightning strikes in the southwest area, and they're going to look into it and find out what the time might be for our guest in Beverly or our texter in Beverly. It's nice, right? It's the Extension 720 community coming together to help each other out. That's great. It's really nice of you. Nice gesture. Find out what's happening with Beverly and maybe get an estimated time and all that kind of jazz. So, all right, so we promised we're going to talk a little bit about Chicago politics, but more importantly, what I think is progressive politics, the Chicago Progressive Reform Caucus, which now is 18 members. We should think about that. A couple of years ago, it was two, like maybe three. Obviously, this is their city council in the sense that they were elected in droves this past election, as well as a mayor who ran on a progressive platform as well. Now, with the 2020 budget just around the corner in October, we've heard from the mayor. She talked to us directly in the primetime speech about possibly all of us having some shared responsibility in filling this budget hole. And we find out what the Chicago Progressive Reform Caucus wants to do as they release their priorities today. Alderman Matt Martin is a new alderman up in the 47th Ward, and he joins me on the line now. Alderman Martin, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. All right, so let's get into this. First, you say it's a fair and equitable budget with socially responsible investments in revenue. What does that mean?
Well, it means the things that we've been campaigning on, both as candidates as well as now as elected officials, where we're asking people who have been doing well, especially as we've been transitioning from a manufacturing-based economy to a service sector economy, to pay their fair share. So that means moving away from regressive property taxes, which put too much of a burden on our working and poor individuals. It means moving away from regressive fees and fines that have ticketed thousands of folks into bankruptcy, and moving towards a budget that reflects our values, a budget that really reflects the fact that we have significant community needs around equity, and we can't wait. We need that immediately.
Okay, so let's get into that a little bit, because when you talk about rolling back some of the regressive taxes or fine systems that we've seen, and we've seen this with the red light cameras, and we've seen this with the excessive ticketing and unfair ticketing and inequitable ticketing when it comes to communities of color, that money needs to be made up. So how do you see that being made up, as well as helping the mayor figure out how to address an $800 million hole?
Yeah, these are the sorts of things that we've been talking about all week long. And so a few of our bigger ticket items are TIF surplus, making sure that as we have a record amount of money in our TIF coffers. I mean, last year for fiscal year 2018, the county clerk just said it's $841 million. That's about the size of our budget gap. So you start with surplusing those TIF funds that haven't been used. It means talking about sales tax modernization in particular, like corporate services around law firms, consulting firms, big accounting firms, asking them to pay their fair share in the ways that people who are manufacturing goods, we do that from a sales tax standpoint already, reinstituting the corporate head tax that we had for 40 years, again, making sure that those companies, we've had like over 60 large corporate relocations, asking them to kick in a little bit as opposed to those working class folks through property taxes and sales taxes. And then finally, things like more progressive rideshare fees, as well as payment in lieu of taxes pilot programs, where you ask some of your really large nonprofit hospitals as well as colleges to kick in a little bit more, given the significant property tax breaks that they all receive.
I like that one a lot, because that's something we've seen in our society, where property taxes have, you know, churches and universities haven't paid. And you've seen this in other cities as well, where they've almost gone to a bargaining table to say, okay, it's not property tax necessarily, it's something else, but you got to pay something.
That's right. We've got cities like Boston, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Baltimore. They do that because you have situations where you have a large, I mean, really kind of corporate-like college or university where they're gobbling up surrounding properties, and you might put one office in a building and then say everything else in there is entitled to that same property tax break. That's just not equitable.
Okay, so let's get into the corporate tax and the idea of getting people to pay their fair share, because how do you stop corporations, or if you're going to go after high-end consultant services or even, as you say, the service industry, how do you stop them from just making the services they provide more expensive to cover the fact that they are now getting taxed? Because that seems to be what usually happens to the middle class and to people who will be all for the concept of equitable budgeting, but then find themselves on the short end of the stick after these things are put in place.
Yeah, it's a great point, and that's where, with sales tax modernization in particular, we can't impose that unilaterally as a city. We'll have to work with our colleagues down in Springfield to bring that in. And so you are focused on some of those higher-end services, and so I think that's where you're talking with legislators in Springfield to make sure that we have sensible policies there when it comes to tax on services. But I think it's also important for folks to recall that many of our neighboring states have taxes on services. And so I think this concern about us like really being out in front in an aggressive way from a tax standpoint, I mean, it's really bringing us to parity to make sure that we're reflecting really the broader move in our economy, which is we're no longer a manufacturing-based economy. We're a service sector economy. So we're increasingly squeezing that manufacturing base here, particularly as it's shrinking. And so we need to have a budget and ways of bringing in revenue that reflect those changes, and in many cases reflect the ways that our sister states have already gone over the last several decades. Okay, we're lagging here.
Many who might be listening to this that don't necessarily live in Chicago and don't share the same sort of politics of the Progressive Reform Caucus, they will say, why all this talk about tax? Why all this talk about generating revenue? Shouldn't you be looking on the expense side? Should Chicago be looking at cutting some of the expenses and cutting some of this stuff back, or rooting out corruption and the kind of things that are said before we start getting to the fact that regardless of what service tax you put on anybody, they're always going to kick the can to the next, and it's always working class and middle class people who seem to carry the load.
So our caucus is working to do both simultaneously, which is what we need. I mean, we need to have a balanced budget in place by the end of the year. And so one of the things that we're taking very seriously as a caucus, including some of our more senior members who are in positions of leadership in terms of committee chairs, is we're holding subject matter hearings. Because before, what you would have, you would not be having the subject matter hearings where you're building up that reservoir of knowledge so that when it's budget season, you can come in and say, I see inefficiency here. I see fat here. I see fraud here. So we're working on doing that right now, holding folks' feet to the fire by saying we're spending already well over $70 million on police overtime. That's ridiculous. We're projected to spend over $113 million next year on police overtime. That's completely out of step with our sister cities, New York and L.A. They spend combined less than we spend alone on that. And so we want to make sure that, one, we're being thoughtful about any efficiencies that can be gained. Same thing with renegotiating some of our debt so that we're paying a lower rate. But let's be honest, about 8 years ago when Mayor Emanuel came in, same situation, they made serious cuts, and we don't want to be in a position where we're cutting the rest of our mental health right. clinics. We want to make sure that efficiencies reflect our values, because I know as an alderman with our constituent services office, we have folks who say we need tree trims, and there's a backlog there. We need potholes and resurfacing done so that we're not damaging our cars. So I think we want to be really thoughtful, not just say we're going to do this hatchet job, but instead be very precise, yeah. but also be honest in the fact that this is a revenue issue that's been building up over decades.
Well, that's a tremendous point, because it was sold as an expense and revenue issue, and mental health services and schools were closed, and we were supposed to be balancing the budget, and yet we still got a huge tax increase. at the end of the day. So both things happened, which are not good for any situation. Alderman Matt Martin,
exactly.
47th Ward Alderman with me. He's part of the Chicago Progressive Reform Caucus. They put out their budget priorities coming up here for the 2020 budget. All right. Let me ask you this. You guys really pushed hard, and you really consider Mayor Lightfoot to be one of your own, in the sense that she ran on a progressive platform, and every one of the caucus kind of came out for her. Do you expect her to adopt these things just for the fact that she's part of the progressive movement? Or are you going to be disappointed if she says TIF reform is going to have to wait? You know what? Let's just go with property taxes.
Well, we're all very hopeful, because, to be honest, we all campaigned, as you were indicating, on similar platforms. We campaigned on equitable budgets. We talked about police reform. We talked about making sure that our schools are adequately resourced. And so now we're beyond the point of talking points, and now it's executing. And so I think when you look at the recent things that we've done collectively, whether it's ethics reform, whether it's Fair Work Week. I know we're all on the same page about the need to adopt a $15 minimum wage. I think you see that we have had successes at a broader, as a broader coalition of progressive members of city council and the mayor's office, and I'm very much hopeful that we can continue that good progress into a really critical time being this budget.
You talked about modernization of sales tax and that that needs to go through Springfield. The session is about to kick off here next week or coming up here in October. There has already been talk that, that there is not a lot of love for the idea of what they call a quote-unquote Chicago bailout, and this idea that changing the tax structure, giving more money or more resources to Chicago is a non-starter among many downstate Democrats, even who don't want to get who don't want to bring that message back to their constituents. So is it a stretch to say that you're going to have success in modernizing sales tax or changing pension reform, anything that you want to get done for the city of Chicago and Springfield?
No, I think that we understand as a broader collection of city council folks and folks in the mayor's administration that some of the things we'll be pushing for, we hope that we can achieve shortly in Springfield, whether it's during the veto session or shortly thereafter, January and February. Other things might be a little longer of a push, and that's okay. I think you never know how certain things are going to break, so you always have to, I think, be ready to take advantage of the moment as it strikes. But I think it's important that we not call this a Chicago bailout. We are looking for the power to do things in Chicago area that benefit Chicagoans. And I understand some concerns that people might have in other parts of the state and how them empowering Chicago to do what's best for Chicago can be twisted. And, you know, we stand ready to have their backs to clarify and to correct those misstatements if and when they come. But to be honest, we need to make sure that we as Chicagoans are able to have policies in place that reflect our values. And sometimes that means going down to Springfield, working with our Chicago-based colleagues to ensure that the other folks in collar counties and other parts of the state realize that as Chicago goes, so goes the rest of the state.
Yeah. Okay, my final question really is just about the situation with the Chicago Teachers Union, and they authorized a strike, and their members came out in full force, way more than the votes that they needed to be able to authorize a strike. You're seeing the mayor and Chicago Public Schools say, hey, we've offered a very generous raise, and you're seeing the CTU come back and say, it's not about money, it's about services and resources for the schools. Where does the Progressive Council or the Progressive Reform Caucus stand on Chicago Teachers Union versus CPS?
Yeah, we stand right now where we've always stood, which is we're a caucus, and one of our core planks is making sure that we're always fighting for adequate school resources. That means equitable staffing, equitable funding for every neighborhood school throughout the city, not just in particular pockets of privilege. We have and continue to fight for and support pushes to have a fair contract for teachers that reflects the critical work that they perform on a daily basis. So we can continue that, and we support the work towards having policies in place that reflect those values as often as possible.
From your seat in the council, I mean, we've been talking about this all day here on WGN, but this idea that, you know, where is the city going to find money to negotiate a contract to add staff, to adequately resource schools, like you just said, neighborhood schools? I mean, it's a tough sell when indeed we are in a position of debt.
So our city is in better shape than it was several years ago, and I think that with this particular budget that we're looking at over the next year or so with CPS, that continues to be true. So we've received several hundred million dollars of additional funding from the state, which is fantastic, and with the TIF surplus, an aspect of our broader TIF reform package, about half of that surplus fund would go directly back into CPS. So I think that we have the resources we need in order to push towards more equitable staffing and equitable funding generally for CPS.
Alderman Matt Martin is with the Progressive Reform Caucus and City Council here in Chicago in the 47th Ward. Alderman Martin, thanks for joining us tonight. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Happy to be on your program.
All right. It's interesting, though. You heard it. And thanks to the Alderman for coming on this day. But that's an interesting notion that the city is in a better position. So when you hear the argument that says, oh, where are we going to get this money? Oh, we're broke. All this kind of stuff. We got this budget hole. Well, we're in a better position than we have in the past. And with all the money coming in for CPS from Springfield that wasn't there 2 years ago, does that change? If you take that out, if you say it's not about money, there's money to be had and to create this contract. What do you think about it? Does that change your thought about the negotiation, what's happening here? And it's also, we don't get into it because we got to move on, but there's more to talk about it. And it's not just about Chicago teachers and Chicago schools. This is a bigger fight about where we see public education going in the future, because they're ringing the bell for many other districts around the country when it comes to what is considered to be adequate staffing. Adequate staffing, adequate resources. Is it okay to have one social worker cover 10 schools? Maybe it was in the 90s. Maybe it was in the 70s. But in 2019, with everything that obviously our world has changed, do the resources and the staffing have to change with it? I think it's mind-blowing to look at a raise that's on the table from the city of Chicago to the Chicago Teachers Union that says, hey, you know what? If you take this raise and this whatever it is, I don't know the numbers in front of me, it's going to make your high-ranking teachers, six-figure teachers, it's going to be six figures across the board. You would think, no-brainer, done, teachers are going to get six figures. But that's not what this is about. It's not a move for them to get paid more. This is about adequately staffing, or what they consider to be adequately staffed schools in neighborhoods, especially communities of color. And they're planting their flag on that. And it's an interesting thought, and I think a conversation we have to still have in this country about what is the right amount of people that should be teaching our kids. And should that be nurse, social worker? Should that be two teachers in school? Should class sizes be limited? Those conversations have to happen, and unfortunately, they only happen at a bargaining table. They never happen in year two of a contract where we're all going to get together and to say, you know what, let's figure out what's right. It only happens around a bargaining table. So I do see where the union's coming from, but you wonder about if, you know, saying if CPS says, yes, I'm going to, for sure, I'm going to give you guys, you know, 5,000 more social workers. Where does that money come from? And Alderman Martin says it comes from a TIF surplus. That's not necessarily on the table. That's what the Progressive Caucus wants. But boy, oh boy, that's a lot of people to be added to the role, and not to think that that's going to, like we just said, be passed on to the families of Chicago. An interesting conversation. I'm glad that Alderman Martin joined us tonight. All right, we'll take a quick break here on Extension 720. Come back. Like I said, we're going to talk a little bit about Southside Food, and we'll also talk about animal testing and cosmetics tonight. 312-981-7200, watching the weather for you, so stay with us. Extension 720, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Looking forward to talking to you guys tonight. It's a dark and stormy night. Hope you're all staying warm and dry. And I know that there are power outages on the southwest side. And I know that there are flash flood warnings throughout not just the south part of the city, but into central Illinois. And we'll pay attention to that. I know David will have that stuff coming up in the newscast as well. But yeah, these kind of nights, ugh. I mean, and we've been watching the radar pretty closely because of just the idea of whether or not we were going to work tonight because of the Sox doubleheader that was postponed. If you're listening now and you're like, when, all right, enough, where's Ed and DJ? Enough of this guy. Let's get back to the game. The game has been postponed. Be a strange programming choice to have me on for 15 minutes while Aloy Jimenez is in the on-deck circle. No, they're postponed. But yeah, we've been watching the radar, and Pete, man, oh man, it stretches all the way back to Iowa. These storms, and you can see the lightning kind of bounce off of the buildings downtown. We broadcast, if you're not familiar, we broadcast right at the mouth of the Chicago River. So the view behind me as I broadcast is Navy Pier and the Lake Michigan and the beginning. I mean, literally where Chicago was founded. That's what's amazing about this experience, and it gives you chills sometimes thinking about it. But this is where the settlement, Fort Dearborn, all that kind of stuff, and DuSable, all that was right here. So to see how the storm kind of bounces off these tie rises over here and to look out even in the dark at what's happening in Lake Michigan is pretty eerie. But like I said, we got you covered tonight, 312-981-7200. And we're waiting for our friends at ComEd to let us know what might be an appropriate wait time for some of the power outages. Lightning is always tricky. That's the problem because, you know, lightning hits any of those power lines. And then it's, I don't pretend like I know what I'm talking about. like here's what happens with the conductor. When the lightning hits, it's gigawatts, it's 1,600 gigawatts. Yeah, I don't know. But I'm sure it's difficult, not to mention that the weather is still happening. It's always got to be a tough job, you know?
It also messes with my dog. So please stop lightning.
Your dog goes nuts.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody's dogs go nuts.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
But let me guess, fireworks too?
Oh, my gosh.
Mm, you know it well.
Does the dog...
Dishwasher.
Do your... dishwasher. do your dogs... Do they sense the storm is coming? They recognize, like you can feel it in their bones?
Yep.
Oh, man. Yeah. So can that help you in any way? Like, if you're thinking, oh, man, I'm trying to get this game of tennis in, and then... Zeus is like, freaking out. And you're like, oh, you know, never mind.
Yeah, we just can't leave. We can't leave the house.
What do you do today?
I stayed at home. I stayed at home until my wife came back. And then I zipped down here.
You should bring the dogs in here. They would love it. Beautiful view.
It's amazing when it's thundering and lightning or the fireworks. It's amazing how much self-control a dog can find.
Yeah, right.
That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, right, right.
There is a limit, but I mean, they do find reservoirs of self-control you didn't know they had.
That's right.
It's like, I ain't going out there. Yeah. No.
I'm going to hold my business.
Yeah, no, that doesn't,
hold. That doesn't happen.
No, they do their business in the house. Yeah. That's what happens.
All right, let me give you a quick update. 630, let's see here. Okay, yeah, so 630 wants to know about the outages, 773 wants to know about the outages. So I've got my my source inside the biz, inside the power company. Looking at the ticket log, Chicago South area has a number of outages. It appears most of the outages are caused by lightning, tree limbs falling on the wires, taking them down. It's very difficult for us to make repairs when it is lightning so much. It can strike and hit the wires, and if we're in the air, it's way too dangerous. But I can't say that's a lot of trees... And crews are out and more are coming in. So that's all I can say. So no time issue yet. So there you go. Thank you very much for that. That's nice, right? Like I said, Extension 720, the family helping out.
Back to Justin Kaufman and Extension 720 on 720 WGN.
312-981-7200, the phone number as we broadcast and try to keep you company through this terrible weather that we're having. Especially out west, the southwest side is a new storm. A severe severe thunderstorm warning is in effect. So we got you covered on that. And like I said, we'll pay attention to it. And hopefully our inside intel, our sources, our intelligence will let us know about any wait times and any more outages when it comes to the power companies in the area. And the lightning is hitting downtown Chicago right now, and it is lighting up. It's such an interesting place to broadcast because on Wednesdays and Saturdays in the summertime, the fireworks happen off of the off of Navy Pier. And so when we're broadcasting, like around 9:30 at night, you will hear the floor rumble. And because of the way that the studio is kind of configured, my back is to the window. So you'll hear you'll feel the floor rumble, and you'll kind of see the light bounce off, and it's such a feeling that it's not natural. So it's not something like, oh, that's fireworks, because you can't hear it. You're inside of we're in a glass room, so that feeling, like the rumble and the light, is very disconcerting. You're like, and it's the same kind of thing here when you're up this high. We're up in the 18th floor, and you see the lightning kind of bounce off it refracts off of the windows in all this kind of way. So it almost is like a strobe effect. It's kind of cool. It's like a dance party up here. It's kind of like what the kids are calling a rave. Do they still call it rave? They don't, do they? Yeah. I like to be the conduit. I like to be the connection to the youth, and to that young person who might be listening to 720 WGN. So, you know, I like to stay hip with the raves, with the house parties. You may see me, you know, like, and maybe I'll hit the blotter. This just happened. They raided a house party. A rave was raided on the northwest side. There'd be a mugshot of me with my neon necklaces with short shorts. I'm like, I'm just trying to fit in. You know, I just got to go where the party's at. I want to know where I want to, you know, it's my job to keep a pulse. I keep my finger on the pulse.
Yeah.
I don't know where I fit into this because, you know, I do have a 12-year-old son, and he is mesmerized by the Masked Singer. The Masked Singer, of course, the highlight of the Emmys, by the way. The highlight of the Emmys. I get the idea that you want to cross-promote. If you watch the Emmys, I think a lot of people did, but it's very, very Masked Singer heavy. Every way they could get the Masked Singer involved in any form, whether it be on the red carpet, whether it be with introducing, you know, any of the presenters. I think one of the musical acts had a Masked Singer in there. The idea just like, oh, man, we got to let them know that the Masked Singer's coming up.
I know when I was watching the pre-show and Ken Jeong was on, and I was like, what's he? Is Community coming back? I didn't even realize that he was the host, and then I watched you watch a football game.
Yeah. Dun, 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 dun. And you got to hear Joe Buck go, coming up on Wednesday, The Masked Singer. Troy Aikman talking about The Masked Singer.
I love that show. Love that show.
Yeah, but he loves it. My son loves it. It's really like a winner. And I feel like that's one of those that I can't tell if I'm hip in the way that I'm paying attention to what the kids are watching.
I think so.
Or stale in the sense that it's a really dumb show. You know, like I commit to it as a family. I'm gonna have a harder time now that Extension 720 is back once the Sox are over to commit to a Masked Singer every mm-hmm. Wednesday night. But I can't tell if I'm, you know, jump the shark, that I have no connection anymore to a younger audience, and that I'm sitting at home watching Masked Singer, or if I still got a hand, you know, I'm still in it.
You're part of you're part of the zeitgeist. You're
right.
You're staying abreast of what is happening culturally.
Right.
I think that's where you fit in.
And what's happening culturally is The Masked Singer?
Well, people, people are talking. It's a highly rated show, right?
I think so. I don't know. I mean, I kind of like it.
Right.
The internet ruins it. Or maybe it's all together. I feel like Google is probably the number one sponsor of The Masked Singer. Because they throw out these packs. Have you watched the show?
I haven't, but I'm familiar with it.
Here we go. Too hip for the hip for the room. Pete Zimmerman, too hip for the room. Watched The Masked
Singer. 4 days ago, I didn't really know what Ken Jeong was doing on the Emmys, and he's been hosting that show for a year.
The idea is at the beginning of the show, they have all of these singers, these B-list celebrities, getting these weird costumes, and it's a singing show, singing dancing show. And so they sing in their voice, but in a costume. So then you got to guess who it is. And the worst singer gets voted off, and they pull the mask off. And then you say, oh, my gosh, it's Antonio Brown, who really was a contestant last year, which I think is hilarious. Fox is like, this guy, let's attach Fox to this budding star. And you see how that went on. But so that's how they do it. And then they have these little produced packages right before the egg mm-hmm. or the Rottweiler comes on. And they give all these clues. I'm a real tough guy, but magic's in my future. And you're like, oh, magic. You're like Googling, like Google's, I don't know if Google's making 5 cents for every Google search, but they're getting like 1,000 Google searches just from those packages. And we're going, magic, Masked Singer. And everybody on Twitter has a theory, and they're usually wrong. But, you know, as the season progresses, it becomes the internet does what it does best, and it fine tunes to figure out who it is. And so it becomes less interesting when you get closer to the end because you're like, oh, it's Gladys Knight.
Yeah.
Everybody knows it's Gladys Knight. She's now she's sitting on there going, I don't know. I can't go anywhere without my pips. And you're like, I know already. I already Googled it.
Why? Can you not Google it?
Yeah, but that's, but I'm telling you, that's part of it. And it's a huge, like, Adam Rippon is the skater who was the U.S. claim in the Winter Olympics a couple years ago. Remember that?
Yeah.
I can't remember if he won gold or not, but he was the highlight of the Winter Olympics. He's got a book out. I know he's coming through town. I saw something where he's going to be at the Music Box next week or the week after. And I'd love to have him on the show, right? It'd be fun to have him, right? He was one of the... When I went to search him in Chicago, just on Google, I know he's coming to Music Box. It was Adam Rippon, Masked Singer.
Ah.
And I looked, it must be because Johnny Weir was one of the guys, and they were like, he had references to ice skating and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And he was just, Adam Rippon was like, he was searched so many times that Google told me Masked Singer. I'm looking for Masked Singer. So it just gives you like how many people are using the internet around the show. It, to be honest, probably the most in, you can make an argument, maybe the most in history. You know, there's not too many television shows that are using the internet in that kind of way. You might have like, you can't really do it for like game shows, for Jeopardy. It's too fast, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to be sitting there Googling every time. Who Wants to Be a Millionaire was maybe before... Really, people had completely absorbed themselves in Google searches. So this may be the best use. I'd make an argument, the best use of the internet for a television show. Right? Maybe you can say news shows or maybe American Idol because you could, but I think you had a call on that.
Yeah, call.
But that's not even internet, you know? So I feel like this, the idea of not, let me put it this way. It feels like Hollywood has always used the internet as a way to get more traffic.
Sure.
So they'll be like, go to this website. Mm-hmm. Go vote on this website. So it was more of a marketing opportunity for them to go to the website. This is not. This is Google searches. This is trying to... Wikipedia is probably getting a million hits off of Johnny Weir's Wikipedia to try and see if he mentioned cheeseburgers anywhere because he mentioned cheeseburgers in the produced package. So you kind of get this feeling that it's more a more authentic and more kind of real way to use the internet as opposed to just go to this website and vote or something like that.
So this is not something that you can just watch passively. You have to research things?
You don't have to. Everybody does, though. It's human nature. There's nobody that watches The Masked Singer. I challenge it. Text in right now. Nobody watches that show and goes, I'm just okay with not knowing. They realize it's right there. It's right at the fingertips for you to be a sleuth. Because they're throwing out all these, they're even throwing you off the scent a little bit. Yeah. And they'll be like, I love to sing, but I love to cook even more. And you're like, oh, like this singer likes to cook.
Now what do you win? Like if you get it right?
Complete and utter respect. Household respect.
It's on Wednesdays?
I think it'll be on opposite us. Yeah, it's on. I think it's Wednesdays or Thursdays, but it's a good show.
I'm going to tape it. I'm going to see if I can get through it without Googling.
You have a hard time because the panel is goofy. The panel is Jenny McCarthy, who now goes by Jenny McCarthy Wahlberg.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, cross brand. You got an Alan Thicke's kid, Robin Thicke. Adam Thicke? I don't remember what it was. Ken Jeong, of course. Comic relief.
Yeah.
He's got like a 60% hit rate. Half the time you're like, it's not this. I don't know what you're talking about. And then one of the... I should know her. She was one of the... don't you wish your girlfriend was hot like me? Like she's a girl band.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember which one. Pussycat Dolls, mm-hmm. maybe? Is that mm-hmm. Was that a thing?
Yeah, I think so.
I can't remember her name, but she's famous from that. And someone on text will tell me who she is. But those four, guess who it is? And they never guess right because they're like, until you get, because they're kind of throwing you off the scent too.
Right, because I've seen the promos where they're absolutely out of their heads. They can't believe that was who sang the song.
Right, right. And then, it seems very manufactured. But and then Nick Cannon, who I think does a really good job. Nick Cannon is the host who brings him out. So I don't know. It seems like an okay, but I think we're on to something that it's the best use of the internet.
All right, I'm gonna tape it. Mm-hmm. We were talking to somebody about Southside, that show on Comedy Central.
Great show.
And somebody was saying like, when's it on? I'm like, I don't know. I don't know. Tape it. You know, I don't know when. Tuesdays at 9 o'clock Central.
I have a better question for you. Do young people say tape it? Is that just a 40 and up? Or is that a 40 and up? I always say that. Oh, yeah, taped it. And someone looking at you is 21, like, what did you just say? I've said that to Miles before. I'm like, oh, just tape it for me. Record? Yeah, tape it. Tape it.
But, like, you don't even know when TV shows. No, like, I don't know when TV shows are on. So I will record The Masked Singer, and I will try to. I'll just watch it. Like, I, you know, I'll just
watch it. It's almost like we can have everybody record it, everyone tape it, everyone watch it, and then we'll talk about it on the show, and we won't need the internet. It will be our own intranet.
Oh, yeah.
It'll be Extension 720 listeners and us doing intranet.
I like it.
All sharing theories, but not Googling anything. It'd be a Google-free experiment. What do you think of that?
You know, like how when you go to Dunkin' Donuts, and on the side of the cup, there's like a trivia.
Yeah, sure.
And then you can win a donut or a coffee, and you could easily look up, you know, you could look up the answer and get it right.
Yeah, but you never do.
No,
I didn't even know that was a thing. I thought it was a peel off and you either win or lose on the spot.
No, there's sometimes where it's a question and you could choose the right answer.
Hmm. No, I guess I never paid attention.
I don't Google. I was like, if I don't know this, I don't deserve the free donut.
That's how jaded I am on any sort of peel offs in any form that I automatically am like, scam, don't care. Not even going to play with this. Don't care. This is not going to happen. I'm drinking this coffee and I'm not peeling anything from this Dunkin' Donuts scam. All right. Let's take a break. And I'm back here on Extension 720. Squad on text. It's his name, Squad. Longtime texter here. He said he would give me $100 charity if I could work in B.B. Richards, Revy Sori, Guy Hoffman, Willie Ray, Hawthorne Wingo, Bobby Moore, or Christopher Stieg into the riffing conversation. We're talking about 80s. You know, I think he's talking, those are hockey players, I think. Most of them. And he's like, please, please, please continue the riff after 9:30. And maybe. We'll see.
I think Revy Sori was an offensive lineman for the Chicago Bears. I feel like I might have had his football card or something. I'm not
sure. You remember football cards? We should have a whole conversation on football cards.
Little number 74? I have no idea.
There's a special type of listener who loves the riff show. You know, and we only do Extension 720 riff shows once in a great while, because it's usually when we get called in because there's a rain delay or a postponement and we didn't have time to carefully prepare. So that's when our Revy Sori is going to get referenced. Christopher Stieg. Remember when Christopher Stieg did that dumb rap from the, I think it was it the first year that I can't remember when the Hawks won the title and he got up there and he's a little drunk and he did like a rap?
Yeah. Yeah.
That was awesome. Looking forward. Can you believe it, Pete? That next week, the Hawks season starts.
Yeah. I think they're going to be good this year.
I think I love all their changes. They didn't look so good against the Caps the other night, but it's preseason. Right. Who cares? But the, yeah. And it's funny because you and I spent the last year, almost the entire Blackhawks season, on the Steve Cochran show. And they do Breakfast with a Blackhawk, where when the Blackhawks players comes on, the coach, Coach Colleton, came on every Tuesday or something like that. They're really ingrained in the culture of the morning show.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Blackhawks. Yeah. And it really, I don't know, it really turned me on to the Blackhawks. Mm-hmm. I have to be honest, like, yep. I've always been a casual fan, but they really dig in deep. And this is the Blackhawks flagship, and I'm excited to be a part of that again. I think it's going to be great. It's going to be a great year. And they're going out to the big opener in Prague, which is, what, Friday?
Yep.
And Steve Cochran and the gang are going to be there? How lucky is that, man?
Fun.
So stuck around for just a little bit longer.
Could be going to Prague.
We can go to Prague. I'd be like, guys, are we going to look at some of this architecture? there's a symphony is playing over at the Grand Hall. Yeah, but I'm filling in. Next week's going to be one of those crazy weeks for me because I'm filling in on the Cochran show. Hear me in the morning, 6 to 10, with G and with the whole gang. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And we'll be doing Extension 720s. I don't know why. I'm burning at both ends, but I always have a hard time like letting go of the nighttime shows.
Yeah, it's your show.
Yeah, and we just, we had a lot of preemptions in the last couple months, and there's a lot of stuff I want to get to and that we want to talk about, so that'll be coming up. So it'll be a lot of, I apologize in advance, it'll be a lot of Justin next week. It's a lot of the same stories about 80s baseball players and working at Omni. Spread them out all over the day.
Do you have a B.B. Richards story by chance?
I don't. I have to figure that one out.
Is that B.B.? Is that a person?
B.B. Richards?
Because I know a J.R. Richards.
Oh. Who's J.R. Richards?
Former Astros hurler.
Oh. Hmm. No, I'm not familiar.
I don't know B.B. Richards.
No, but
I'm trying to get you the money.
I do know a Dan Quisenberry. A Kent DeColvey. We were having this guy, we do the podcast Lower Wacker Live, which... Ultimately, if you listen to that, every third minute there's some reference to an 80s baseball player. That's just the way it is. And we just stopped doing it for the summer because Extension 720 comes back in full on Monday. And we were talking about that Steve Cishek, the submarine pitcher for the Cubs, mm-hmm. who's been on and off this season. He's been thrust into the role of closer half the year. You don't see that anymore. There are not a lot of submarine pitchers. We're talking about Quisenberry and DeColvey, and after that, when you get into the 2000s, it just feels like at a certain point, the league caught up to that kind of pitcher,
mm-hmm.
and there's still like a couple of guys like, no, I'm going to try it. Let's see how it goes. I'm going to make it my thing. It's going to be my thing. C-Sheck, they're like, why don't you pitch overhand? Like, why don't you bring your shoulder up and up? No, I like coming from the side. It tricks them. They don't see it coming.
Yeah, when does, and their development.
Right.
Like, is he doing that when he's eight? It's like... Like his dad is like, no, you got to go. You got to go submarine. That's the wave of the future.
Yeah, it was like a natural moment. When he realizes he's submarining. Or was it, sort of like maybe C-Sheck was, maybe his dad was like a submarine pitcher. And he's like, let me give you this legacy, the C-Sheck legacy. Or maybe it's just like one, like every pitcher's got a thing. I think about Yu Darvish. I kind of get annoyed by Yu Darvish because when Yu Darvish pitches, he does his leg kick and he holds it just a bit longer than anybody else. And mm-hmm. that's his trick. And that's what gets the batters off balance. And what's happened is that they figured that out. That's why he gives up so many home runs, because he throws that fastball thinking that I tricked you with my leg kick. I tricked you. You're not going to see it coming. Oh, you saw it coming. That thing's out on wavelength. And the same, I always had a problem with Ryan Dempster. He's a buddy of the station, and I like Ryan Dempster. Yeah, is a very charming guy. He's great. Yeah. But the same thing, where he would move his he'd move his mitt.
Yeah.
He'd like, that's going to, don't look over here. Look over here. Are you looking at my glove? Look at how weird it is in the fastball. it's one of the only sports left with this kind of artistic trickery, and that's what's beautiful about baseball: artistic trickery. Like, you don't have quarterbacks that are sidearms. You don't have basketball players who are like, take a look at this. I shoot submarine. Like, it's all pretty much the same.
Yeah.
But baseball, there's still that artistic trickery that comes from mostly middle relievers. All right. Coming up, let's do the download on Chicago business. We're going to talk with Frank Ruffalo from Franco's Restaurant Group, and we're going to talk about what it takes to expand a restaurant group, a really famous South Side restaurant group, not just talking about the North Side and downtown. We'll talk about that on our download on Chicago business, which is coming up right after the news.
It's business time. It's business. It's business time.
Welcome back to Extension 720 here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Now it's time for the download on Chicago business, where we talk to Chicago entrepreneurs, get their stories so we better understand ours. Right now, Frank Ruffalo's in studio. He's the man behind the Franco's Restaurant Group, which is the owner of five different restaurants in the Chicago area. Franco's, of course, in Bridgeport. That's been there for about 40 years. Franco's at the Fountain, Millennium Park, Franconello in Beverly, Jam and Honey in Lincoln Park, and their newest restaurant, Il Culacino Italian by McCormick Place. Frank Ruffalo has taken over from his parents, and he's 26 years old, and he's my guest in studio now. Thanks for being our guest here.
No problem. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Okay, so let's talk about this. What does it take to be a restaurant group? Does it start with just expansion, or was that the goal of the family?
You know, I don't think that was ever the goal. We were always a restaurant family. We kind of started just, that's what my father knew, so he started with hot dog stands and pizza places, stuff like that. So Franco's Ristorante was his first full-service restaurant he started. It was in 1989. So that was kind of the first taste of running a fine dining restaurant, sticking it out, and, you know, amping it up from something smaller. And then after that, you slowly just start adding on. So in 93, he opened Francanello's with a partner in Beverly and 102nd Western. We've had a couple other locations through the years. 2011, we opened Jam and Honey in Lincoln Park. I got out of college in 2015. I renovated Franco's Ristorante. The following summer, I opened Franco's at the Fountain. And then shortly after that, I was, you know, planning to open up this fifth location. So I don't think you really go into it trying to be a restaurant group.
Right.
But at a certain point, when you keep growing, it's easier to get some staff and kind of operate at a bigger scale because you have more behind
you. How does it help you as being an entrepreneur, as being the managing partner, to have grown up in restaurants?
I don't think I really could have done it without seeing the struggles and really what goes into it before that. My parents, my mother and my father, are both heavily involved in the business. I did not have a normal childhood where, okay, 5 o'clock, everyone comes home, we have dinner. You know, my father took off maybe one weekday, one weeknight. So it was really tricky. I see the lifestyle it is, and they didn't want me to get into it. I don't think it's something for everyone. There is no normalcy. There is no holidays off. My busy time, theoretically, should be when everyone else is off. So when you guys leave work at 5 o'clock, from 5 to 10 should be my busiest hours. So just right there, my whole world is put on a different axis because I'm not operating at, you know, a normal time clock.
Right.
So it's pretty tricky, but I think I saw how my mother and father started and saw, you know, what their lifestyle was, and it was something I was attracted to.
Restaurants have become, you think of restaurateurs, you think glamorous. You're out and about, you're winning awards,
yeah,
you're doing whatever it might be. But it's, we never really get into what it takes and the sacrifice it takes to run what essentially is a small business.
Yeah, it's not the easiest thing. You might think a restaurateur is someone that they start their day at 1 or 2 in the afternoon. They work until 10. They might go out to a bar or a restaurant until 3 or 4. They sleep and then they do it. Well, in reality, that's not it. Maybe for the servers or maybe for the chefs. And that's just because their time schedule is different. But for someone, when you're managing the businesses, my day starts at 8 to 9 o'clock in the morning. I normally don't finish till 2. So it's around the clock. It's not just show up at 4 o'clock, the doors open, turn the key, and hopefully people come in. There's a ton more behind that. Not only am I a business owner, I have to manage people in general. So managing people, babysitting people, it's not the easiest, you know, process. Then you're also an electrician, you're a plumber, you're making calls when this machine goes down. There's a lot more into it than just cooking the food.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of people that say, oh, I love cooking, I'd love to open a restaurant. I say, you know what? Maybe you just come and work and see what it's like, because cooking a pizza at home because you have a great recipe is radically different than opening up a business and dealing with
it. The old adage is that a successful restaurant is a restaurant that could be open for more than 5 years, right?
Yeah.
That there really is the turnover. And it has a lot to do with the margins, because it isn't necessarily an industry or a business where money just flows, because you have, like you just said, everything breaks and there are real tight margins. And how do you... And your family, how do you keep above that and not fall prey to some of the trappings of small businesses?
So at some point, I think it's easier just to own one restaurant. You have one headache, it's smaller, there's less going on. But in the bigger picture, I do get some better offerings because I buy in such quantity. My father's been doing this forever. My mother's been doing this forever. So my father, I've kind of learned from him how to control food costs, how to control labor costs, because that's really the hardest thing right now. So when we're looking to buy something for 5 restaurants compared to one, well, we have the space, we have the product that we'll use. So, you know, if there's a better deal going on at that week, or when we go to pick our tomatoes for the season, we know how much we're going to use, so we can capitalize on that. Mm. The other thing is you have to evaluate what you're going to spend on and what you're not going to spend on. Our margins on everything are incredibly, incredibly tight. Today, we were just talking about this weather right now. Most people wouldn't realize I have to take that into effect for my schedule, because if I have an outdoor patio at all my locations, I have to call people off on that, and that's already eliminating potentially a third of my restaurant sales for that evening. So there's a lot of different factors you have to schedule into it. You know, when we get these crazy winter storms and the weathermen are talking it up for 2 weeks, don't go out, get the salt, get the shovels. that kills me for weeks on end. When sports teams go, you know, into playoffs, their people are not going to be going out to restaurants like their normal routine. They might go to a bar and they might order pizza and they might order delivery, but for a fine dining Italian or something like that, they're not going to come out. So there's so many different factors.
It's so amazing to think about all of the elements that we don't think about that have an effect on a restaurant and a restaurant business. You have such a variety of space, meaning you have, you know, Franco's in Bridgeport, but then also in Beverly, downtown.
Sure.
Jam and Honey's on the north side by DePaul. Do the restaurants take on, are they different because of their locations?
They are different, but the biggest thing that is kind of my hallmark is obviously we've been around for close to 40 years. So the food stands, you know, up to the test of time. You can't be in Chicago without having good quality. Our places are well kept. Our places look great. But my big hallmark is service. So what we do when we go into every area is we want to, you know, join that community. So I'm not going to come in and just try to be my own thing. I want to, you know, mesh well and let people know that we're here not only for conventioners, not only for out-of-towners, but we want to be a local establishment. Mm-hmm. That's how we're able to stay in Bridgeport for 30 years. That's how we're able to operate in Beverly for, you know, going on 26. So that's the biggest part of it, because each place naturally will have its own characteristics. It will have its overarching theme that, you know, this is how it's going to run and this is what we enjoy. But the biggest thing is we always cater to the clientele of the area. So what we do in all of the locations is Franco's, I'm heavily involved in, you know, the neighborhood there. That's a neighborhood we live in. So we really want to become a pillar of it. Franconello, the same thing. Those are, you know, great people down there, and we want to support them because they support us. Because in the long run, you hit it on the head. If a restaurant's open for longer than 5 years, you're doing something right. So when you're going into, you know, decades upon decades, that's where you have to constantly listen and make sure your quality and your service is up to par, and that's what people expect.
You see in Chicago, there's been a gold rush when it comes to restaurants and restaurateurs.
Absolutely.
And a lot of it, whether it's be covered by some of the media entities in Chicago, have really focused on downtown and the north side of Chicago and the restaurants, you know, that are happening in the West Loop, things like that. Do you get a chip on your shoulder being a South Side entrepreneur?
Not at all. You know, the South Side will always get that rep. When you go out of town and you would say you're from Chicago, the first thing they used to say, now this is, you know, many years ago, Michael Jordan, right. Al Capone.
Right.
Now it's changing a little bit, but that's all, you know, what the city is. And if you notice now, there's so much gentrification going on. I see from when I renovated Franco's going on 4 years ago till now, the amount of people I get outside of Bridgeport has, you know, close to tripled, because now people are going into that area. They're going to check it out. They're seeing what, you know, what's happening. So that's great. But in the same token, Chicago is a city of neighborhoods. I think that's what makes us great, because we're not just one, you know, vanilla box that is the same thing. You have people who want to go explore a different area each weekend, you know, every couple of days. So that is a nice characteristic. Does the South Side get a little bad rap? Absolutely. But that's just something you got to work harder at.
Opening up the restaurant by McCormick Place, to think of it in this way, and Pete and I were talking about this right before, the idea of it being a food desert. For all of the money that the city has pumped into McCormick Place and to try and bring conventions and tourists here, the restaurant dining scene, besides maybe a couple blocks up in the South Loop, really hasn't matured. So it's surprising to me that there aren't more restaurants like yours that are really catered towards that area.
Yeah, and you know what? That's just the way it works right now. When you get into something on the ground level, there's going to be growing pains, and there's going to be people that either rush it and say, yeah, this is a great idea, or people that doubt you. So when we go into looking for our new locations, we look at, you know, things that are going to be there for a while. The Wintrust Arena they just put up, they can't afford to let that close. You have four hotels that on a weekly basis turn over thousands and thousands of people.
Mm.
So that to me was a natural, you know, transgression to go there, because it is such a great area. There was nothing else there. There was a pizza place, another bar, and then me. That's the only other restaurant. So now we can keep those people who come in town for 4 days, keep them right in that one block
area. Right.
They can walk everywhere. They can get Chicago-style pizza one day, Italian food and steaks and chops another day by me, and then go to a bar. So I think it was a great spot. We're doing pretty well there, and we're getting great reception from the neighborhood and the conventioners. But it's just, you get some early adapters who want to jump into something, and you get some people who are, you know, they're non-believers in it. So you just got to go with it.
You're a young guy, 26 years old. How does that help you in this business?
I think that I've had the background of doing things that, you know, my father and my mother have done, and that, you know, I got their thought process down. Now it's kind of my time where I can go on and do my own thing. So when I started with Frankers at the Fountain, that was something new we've done. We do a ton of festivals and Lollapalooza and stuff like that. Now I'm kind of, I was lucky enough where I was brought up into it, so I see what to look for and what not to look for. My childhood was spent with my father going to the restaurants on Sundays and, you know, going into different real estate deals with him and going to look for restaurants. So now I kind of have that on my own, and I can take what I've learned throughout my career and kind of do that to the next, you know, generation and go from there.
Well, Franco's Restaurant Group is continuing to grow. And like I said, Franco's at the Fountain, Franconello's in Beverly, Jam and Honey in Lincoln Park, yep, we didn't talk much about, and an El Culacino in right by McCormick Place on South Indiana. Frank Ruffalo, my guest tonight on the Download in Chicago Business. Can't thank you enough for coming
thank
in
you.
And continued success with the restaurant.
Thank you very much. Stop by sometime.
All right, paying attention to the weather tonight, 312-981-7200. As we know that there is severe weather coming through the area, and as you radar watcher, like some of us, I'm not as much a radar watcher, but they have turned the main, they have a screen right outside in the waiting room here. I went out to get water, and it's just on the radar. It's not even like a broadcast, it's just radar. Probably for the Sox team that was deciding on or worrying about whether or not there was going to be a game. They obviously found out there is not. There is not. But this is a severe weather coming through the area, including flash flooding and flash flooding warning. And that's particularly going to hit the south suburbs. And I know that that's an area that I read an article that the BGA put out just this week about how the south suburbs, and it's a surprising story to me, but that the south suburbs get hit the hardest when it comes to rainstorms and flooding and flash flooding in our area. And you wouldn't think that based on the news coverage. News coverage almost always seems to talk about the flooding as it pertains to the flooded Des Plaines rivers or the banks of the river, the Des Plaines River, the Fox, perhaps. And obviously what we've seen happen to many of our great communities in the area over the last couple of years. But the south suburbs, particularly suburbs of that are communities of color or low-income communities, and that's what this BGA, Better Government Association, piece is about. It's really just about towns like Ford Heights. They continue to get hit. All sorts of areas that really were supposed to be helped out by a deep tunnel, the deep tunnel project that happened, but obviously was for a different world that we lived in because it took like a year for it to become somewhat obsolete. But here's a stat from that story. In Chicago, 87% of flood damage insurance claims paid between 2007 and 2016. In minority communities, that's where they happen. 87% of insurance claims between 2007 and 2016 happened in minority communities. This is according to the Chicago-based Center for Neighborhood Technology. That's amazing to think about. And it's not that different than the conversation we had when it came to Heat Wave. Was that the name of the movie? What was the Cooked? Survival by Zip Code. Remember that? We were talking a lot about that a couple of months ago. This was the big Chicago Heat Wave documentary that was done by the Cartempwin Film guys. And I really look back at a story that we seem to be all familiar with, which was the concept of what happened here in 1995, years and years ago now, over 25 years, coming up on 25 years. And how it really was a story that was so much about how what we knew as the story was not the story. And the documentary was just all about how certain communities in our area, especially ones that were really poverty ridden, were the majority of people who died from the excessive heat. There were a lot of complaints and we kind of shook it off, and there was a lot about Mayor Daley, and I'm sort of like, we're Chicago, we're tough. But because of the impact of poverty on these impoverished neighborhoods and communities, that the death rate from a heat wave was in the hundreds, or hundreds of people died. And when you think about that, And what the documentary showed is that that was a cluster. There were the people who died, most of the victims of this horrific, I think 700 people or something like that, all came from the south and west side of Chicago. There's some spots here and there in the city, but it really came from areas that were hit hard by poverty. Now, one of the reasons was that some of the elderly residents didn't want to open their windows because it was so dangerous in their neighborhood. So they had to make a choice between dying of heat or dying from the criminal element. Others just had to do with the rundown nature of the buildings that they lived in. The other things like not having access to some of the other things that other, I guess, more well-off neighborhoods had. It'd be even the simplest thing like opening up the fire hydrant to get water. So when you read this story that the BGA put out saying that flash flooding happens more often in the south suburbs and specifically the south suburbs communities of color that have more poverty, it takes me back to that documentary saying that we could have a story that says we have flash flooding tonight and it's terrible. And there have been accounts, and we'll see this on the news and as it comes in, but there have been anecdotal accounts of flash flooding taking over and people having to be rescued from their cars. That same shot you're going to see on the 10 o'clock news. I want in just, you know, an hour or so when the reports start to come in to think critically and say, hey, it's interesting where they're putting the byline to say that that happened in Robbins or it happened in Harvey or it happened in Ford Heights. And think about the idea that that area continues to be the area that has flash flooding impacted the most. And it's, for whatever reason, it has more implication to that area than other areas of the city. Now, that could be because of just the way that their community's laid out. It could be because of, like I said, like the deep tunnel project not working in that regard. But it also has to do with resources. And it has to do with where those houses were built and why they were built there and what their property value, all that kind of stuff kind of plays in. But to think that right now, you know, the most vulnerable to the flooding and the flash flooding warnings that you hear from David and hear from WGN Radio seem to be concentrated to the south suburbs of the Chicago area. Southern Cook County. Park Forest comes up on the list. Dalton, Riverdale, Robbins. They're all towns close to the Calumet River and tributaries with stormwater systems that can't handle the rapid bursts of heavy rainfall. And the lack of planning resources. And I think this is where you get at it. The lack of planning resources to re-engineer those communities. And there's got to be something to that, right? I mean, that's... at the end of the day, I get in trouble because I get the letters all the time. I'll get letters that tell me, oh, you just want a nanny state for everything. And people will go to great lengths to let me know what they think of. Whenever I say do you think we're going to see a future where the government pays for X? Whether it be for job training, I'm going to write this guy. Whether it be for early education, I'm going to write this guy. So I don't want to suggest that there needs to be some sort of fund or tax that comes from, or not going to say tax, not tax, but some sort of resource reallocation to deal with re-engineering some of these communities that continually get hit as global warming and climate change hits us and becomes the thing. You have to be prepared to rethink the way that we share resources or re-engineer our communities. And to me, I just wonder about, I'm not saying that necessarily, and these areas are the ones that, when you think about a lot of these towns, they're on their own. The property taxes are through the roof already to pay for just the services they have. But you have to ask the question about where's the federal government? Where's the state government? Where's the, I don't know if the U.S., you know, Army Corps, engineer, all that kind of stuff plays into this. But just this idea that perhaps we need to rethink the way that our communities are most vulnerable to flooding exist. I don't know how to do that, and I would never say that I do. That's not. But I do think that it's worth a conversation because more often than not, and if this happens every time a storm comes through this area, flash flood or not, And it's causing the kind of damage that this Better Government Association article is talking about in the southern suburbs. We're not hearing about it. I like to be a conduit for you, the listener, too, because I tried my best to absorb as much as possible when it comes to the news to this area. There's a lot of feeds that are coming at me, and I have never thought about this story beyond the fact that it was a random flood in Robbins or a flood in Elgin, a flood in Island Park, a flood in Park Forest. But when the BGA actually breaks it down, and we should have the author on, we should get him on, Brett Chase. And it's a great piece. You should look it up. I think just Google who is the Masked Singer, and you'll find it. It's great. No, I think it's called Storms Flooding Hit Poorest Communities Hardest. And it's all about the South, particularly disproportionately hitting the South suburbs. So it's interesting, and it's worth the read. So take a look at it, and maybe we can have a conversation. We'll get Brett on, and we can talk more about it. Because, again, I don't know if the answer is throw money at the problem. But it does seem to me that there might be some shifting priorities. If this continually happens, it can't just be like, well, that's rain. Especially as our climate changes, and we have more and more of these fast-moving strong storms that dump a ton of water at one time, you're going to think that these communities that don't necessarily have the resources allocated for them, how are they going to survive? Something to think about. That's what we're doing here in Extension 720. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Coming up, let's talk about animal testing. This story has been in your Facebook feed. I don't know if that's fake news or what the deal is, but there have been a push just in the last couple weeks from Congress to federally ban animal testing for cosmetics. Which brings up the question, how has that not been banned already? So we'll have that conversation with Elizabeth Alfano. Extension 720 rolling along here, 312-981-7200, phone number. We continue to bring you a program that was didn't exist earlier this afternoon, but the Chicago White Sox, because of the weather, had their doubleheader postponed. Now, if you are a Sox fan, you're listening right now, this is interesting. It's a little bit of baseball. I don't know if it's baseball history, but it's interesting factoid in the sense that they're only going to make up one of these games. So tomorrow they're going to have a doubleheader, and then they are going to end up on Sunday just playing a regular game. So they only have three games left, so that they will have played 161 games as opposed to the full 162 schedule. And now you know. That was my Tim McCarver moment. And now you know. Hey, everybody. Welcome to... It's like the baseball bunch. Johnny Bench, right? Anyway, so the, which I was a member of, by the way. I don't want to make a big deal about it. Yeah, the baseball bunch had, I think it was on the back of a cereal box, probably. Maybe they had commercials for it. I remember Johnny Bench had the baseball bunch, and you could, and I somehow sent a letter and got wristbands in return. I was part of the baseball bunch, no big deal. They're red, white, and blue wristbands. Here for the baseball bunch. If anybody else was part of the baseball bunch, you know, we can do a reunion. You can text in right now. We can talk more about the baseball bunch. Yeah, like I feel like it was on the back end of some, like maybe it was like the stickers. Did you ever do the stickers, like the baseball sticker book where you get the stickers from the, the Major League Baseball sticker books. And so there were, instead of baseball cards, they were stickers, and they'd sell them at the stores. And then you'd have the sticker book and you'd like, oh yeah, I got Jim Rice. I got Dwight Evans. Yes. And then you peel it off and you put it on the spot that was where Dwight Evans was. And it'd be like seven of the Red Sox. You've never seen any of those books, Pete?
No, I don't remember that.
They have
all
those now. They still sell them at Target and stuff, because I got one for Miles when he was younger and I thought he would enjoy it as well. And he's like, I don't care. This has been the bane of my existence of not having a sports kid, is I can't, you know, sort of go back and relive my childhood and be like, oh my God, you got Dwight Evans too? You got Mookie Betts? Yeah, so anyway, but that was a huge thing in my childhood, was like, and so maybe it was on the back of that. It's like the baseball bunch in some form. Maybe they had, I feel like I remember them having ads or some sort of thing that was on the back of a cartoon or something. You could be part of the baseball bunch. And yeah, so you've got a bunch of stuff.
Ah.
Yeah. I'll try to find it. Maybe I know I had a baseball bunch t-shirt, maybe.
Wow. Yeah, this is good stuff.
I know. I feel like it's and it's just coming back to me. I don't feel that I have properly embraced the memories of being a part of this elite group, this membership to the baseball bunch.
Do you think that, are you sure, maybe this is something that your parents made up? No, nobody else knows what this is.
Justin has a memory. He's a real active imagination. Let's fake. We'll come to him in a dream. I'll dress up like Johnny Bench.
Hey, son, you're now part of the baseball bunch. Here's a wristband.
We're like, oh, thanks, Johnny. No, it was a thing. All right. Let's move on to our topic that we wanted to talk about tonight. We've been pushing all night. This idea of animal testing in cosmetics. And I have seen this story a lot in the last couple of weeks, and I wondered why, and I looked it up. And it's very interesting because with all the impeachment stuff that's happening in the House, you don't get any other news that's coming out, of course. And that's the rallying cry of a lot of Republicans that say, hey, this politics and this impeachment stuff is stopping us from getting stuff done because we would have gotten it done. Which they wouldn't have. There wasn't this. Don't let them fool you. But there was there's one big push to actually have a federal ban on animal testing when it comes to cosmetic companies. And it made me think, how is that not a thing? It feels like that should be a thing. I don't know where we are in 2019, but I thought that was a thing. The idea that there are only three states, and you guessed it, one of those states is the state of Illinois, thanks to State Senator Linda Holmes, and also to J.B. Pritzker, who signed it just this August. So think about it, that Illinois joins Nevada and California as the only three states in the union that put a ban on animal testing when it comes to cosmetics. This is a big issue for Elizabeth Alfano. She, a longtime podcaster and friend of the show, but also the host of Awesome Vegans podcast, she joined us on the line now. Elizabeth, good to talk to you.
Hi there, Justin. How are you?
I'm good. Are you like me that you get a little bit like flabbergasted that the federal government is just now taking up the idea of banning cosmetic testing on animals?
I mean, I get it on so many levels. The federal government does animal testing for lots of things, not just cosmetics. And so you say, well, okay, cosmetics really aren't necessary and, you know, other testing perhaps. We think, you know, our health, oh my gosh, it's got to be necessary. But the fact is, animal testing is not reliable. I'll just give you an example of cosmetics. Bunnies don't make tears. So if you're going to put chemicals in a bunny's eye, you really don't know if it's going to make humans tear up.
That's the idea, right? That's what they're doing. They're doing that kind of stuff where they're dropping chemicals in rabbits' eyes and doing stuff like that that has irreparable and painful damage to animals to see if that would be the impact on a human.
Yes, but, you know, humans and animals, they're not the same. Biologically, they're not the same. And so you have much more efficient testing, modern testing in other ways, simulations, et cetera, that are much more reliable and then much more cost tax effective.
Right.
So for a bunch of reasons, you would think that the federal government would be all over this. But, of course, moving the Titanic is slow to happen. And I think even more poignantly, change never comes from the top.
Yeah.
I mean,
Elizabeth, too, and I think about, you know, the idea that I can understand, and I will play devil's advocate just in the way that I could understand why you would test on animals before you test on humans. But I feel like with technology and the way that science has progressed, that's an old argument. That's not an argument that anymore is really shows any value or validity, because we have found different ways to almost manufacture organisms, if that makes any sense, to try tests and trials and tribulations and all that goes with that without actually harming animals.
Yes, right. Absolutely. Modern testing alternatives are less expensive, they're faster, and they're more predictive of human reactions. And that's what we want. I mean, as you say, you know, you're playing devil's advocate, you would advocate for testing on an animal before testing for a human, but only if it gives you reliable results. Right? You're
right,
not doing it
right.
just for a fun test. I mean, you're doing it because you'd like to see how it benefits humans. And if you do that more cost effectively, faster in other ways, why wouldn't you?
Yeah, and when you look at the data, and I was looking at it today, when polling goes out on this issue, especially when you're talking about you know, cross-generational, will see that the large number of Americans, 80% plus, believe that this should be a practice that ends. Now, the state of Illinois has picked this up, and they went ahead before the federal government and banned it in the state of Illinois. And this really had to do with the work of State Senator Linda Holmes, and you've been a big part of championing her story, and you're having an event for her this next week. But, the state of Illinois seems to be way ahead of the federal government on this issue.
Well, so I'd love that you say that, because the state of Illinois is ahead of the federal government in many ways. So, yes, Senator Linda Holmes has been on my podcast, Awesome Vegans, and yes, I am hosting an event in honor of her this Tuesday, October 1st. I hope everyone will come. Tickets are only $15. It's a chance to be up close and personal with the senator. But she has done a lot of things to put Illinois out in front. Currently, Illinois is the number one state for animal welfare laws, according to the Animal Legal Defense Fund, and we've been number one for 11 years in a row.
Okay, Elizabeth, the one thing I will say, though, is I think about the way that this world can work, sometimes in awful ways, is that if the federal government steps up and says you cannot test cosmetics on animals, the big corporations that sell cosmetics are going to find ways to test, and they may just offshore this stuff and go to China, which is a big culprit when it comes to animal testing. So how do we stop animals being tested upon in other countries that we don't have jurisdiction over?
Yes, that's absolutely right. So right now, the law that you're talking about, it talks about banning the sale and importation of any cosmetic that is tested on animals or any ingredients in that cosmetic that are tested on animals as of January 1st, 2020. But of course, animal testing takes place all over the world, China being a big culprit, and we're just trying to use our wealth to influence them, because ultimately it comes down to a question of money. And so if people aren't buying their products because all of their competitors have gone testing free, then they're going to start to stop animal testing.
When you start thinking about some of the big cosmetic companies, and they don't have to be named, but what is their response to continuing this practice? This practice is not only outdated and seems obviously inhumane, but it's not in favor, meaning that most of the customers are showing with their wallet and with their money that they don't want to be a part of that product.
That's right. They're voting with their wallet. And people do vote for animals when they get the chance. You had mentioned 80% of cross-generational voters want to see animal testing go away. But that's true for even factory farms and other things. When people have the opportunity, they always vote for animals. I think it's a marketing opportunity lost more than anything else. So when you see all your competitors saying, we don't test on animals or cruelty-free, it's hard for the older organizations, corporations, to keep up, because that's really the products that people want. And so you're seeing them turn over slowly, and usually the rationale is, we just haven't gotten all the ingredients out of the system yet. Hmm.
Do you think this, at some point, when we talk about animal cruelty, but animal testing and animal welfare in general, do you imagine a time when this kind of issue becomes a campaign issue, that you start seeing more presidential candidates talking about this? Is this something that, because of the worldwide trend, and when you look at these polls where it's 80%+ of Americans, Republican, Democrat, everything in between, agree on this topic?
Yeah, I love that you say that. So this has to be like the only thing that Republicans and Democrats agree on. It takes a sociopath, really, to say, oh, I really want to see cruelty done to animals. So when given the chance, again, like we said, most people vote, even if it means more money for them, most people vote that they don't want to see cruelty to animals. And I think, sadly, I think the window is going to be missed for the 2020 election. Julian Castro's talking about it a little bit in terms of animal welfare, but mostly he's talking about pets and dogs, but at least he's bringing it up. Cory Booker is vegan, but he has shied away from the topic. So I think everyone is still a little bit gun-shy, but, you know, with every passing generation, starting wholeheartedly with millennials, they do not want to support unethical purchases. Yeah. So they're voting with their dollars, and that's just more and more the younger and younger you get.
Well, we may see in the United States of America an outright ban that could be getting through Congress if they get back to the issue. Others don't get in the way. Elizabeth Alfano is the host of the Awesome Vegans podcast, and she's also hosting an event for Senator Linda Holmes, which is when?
It is this Tuesday, October 1st, from 6 to 8. It's a $15 ticket. You can meet me at No Bones Beach Club from 6 to 8, and you'll get all this free food that there comes with the ticket. So you'll have to go to my Facebook, well, actually go to the No Bones Beach Club Facebook page, and you'll, or my Facebook page as well, Awesome Vegans, and you'll see the invitation and you can get a ticket right there.
There you go. It'll be all there on Facebook for you. Elizabeth, thanks for joining us tonight.
My pleasure. Have a great and wet night.
Thanks. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, when you have, it's a great conundrum when you have polling numbers that are upwards of 80%, which in America, you don't find that kind of stuff. And you have to understand that most polls, you know, when you say the president's doing well, 38% think he's doing well, or it's like 47%. Oh my gosh. To have overwhelming 80+% say they don't want cosmetics that have been tested on animals, and the federal government's going to, it's interesting to watch how public sentiment can force the public good or the federal government to move. And that's what it looks like it's happening in this case. And we'll find out as it snakes through in the fall here if it actually has traction and gets through the House and the Senate. All right, we'll continue the extension 720 tonight, 312-981-7200. Of course, our phone number. We'll take a quick break. Come back. Stay with us. Well, as always, Beats by Pete Zimmerman tonight. Extension 720, 312-981-7200. People texting in saying they always love the riff show. We riff around. Makes you kind of be like, oh, well, so much work in the real shows. Keeping an eye on the weather, David Jennings has got you covered in the news, which is coming up in just a couple minutes here. And then, of course, coming up at 10 o'clock, John Hansen's in tonight. So John will be taking over. We're kind of be back on the regular schedule because this was the White Sox doubleheader. Now, here's the story about the White Sox that I love. We were talking to Roe about this at the crosstalk, and they didn't seem to care. Carms didn't care either, but I care. I care as a White Sox fan. There is something significant and sentimental and symbolic about avoiding 90 losses. I know it's stupid and doesn't mean anything. At the end of the day, does it mean a thing? No. But it's psychological, it's mental. And the White Sox brains, the White Sox fans' brains, that you say, hey, it wasn't a 90 season, it wasn't a 90 loss season. There's something about that when you get to that point, that's when you're like, geez, that's Kansas City Royals territory. And the White Sox, boy, oh boy, maybe 2 weeks ago were on a fast track to that. We saw they had a pretty substantial losing streak, and they found themselves up over 80 games. And I was like, yeah. And I was talking to Zaz here at the station, and he was like, yeah. And he was like, I don't think they won't hit 90. And I was like, yeah, I don't know. He's just sweating. And we were kind of counting it down on a Lower Wacker Live podcast every week, like the magic number to not get 90 losses. But this postponement and the fact that they lose a game is actually a win. Because it goes in neither the loss category or the win category. So technically, they could still finish without 90 losses. Now, they are, 68 and 88, I believe, something like that.
They have 88 losses.
Yeah. Yes, maybe more than that, 70 and 88 or something like that. And they have 3 games left. So the idea being that they have to win 2 of 3 to avoid 90 losses. Now, you would think, oh, that's crazy. Well, they're playing the worst team in baseball, the worst, at home in Chicago. So winning 2 of 3 is what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
Right? Split the doubleheader, win on Sunday. Win in dramatic fashion. Walk off Jose Abreu, not Moncada or Jimenez because they're on the fantasy baseball team that I'm playing this week.
And the Tigers. Who's even on the Tigers these days?
I couldn't name 2 Tigers. Is Lou Whitaker still on the Tigers? Here we go. How about Chet Lemon? Chet Lemon still playing center for the Tigers?
How about Denny McClain still pitching for the Tigers?
Denny McClain? How about a Lance Parrish?
That's another name I haven't heard in a long time. You old.
Oh, there's nothing better. Nothing better. Could you name this? Could you name the all Tigers? Like, could you name, like, even if it's just 80s and 90s, could you give an 80s and 90s nine players from the Detroit Tigers? Like, who was their catchers? Lance Parrish was a catcher?
I think so, yeah.
Who was playing third base for them? Whitaker was at second. Trammell was at short. Did you have a... I feel like one of the Clark boys was at first. It just feels like they would have been, right? What's his name?
Jack Clark?
Yeah. Cardinal? I feel like one of the Clark boys. It feels like it would be like a Jack. Like maybe like Joe Clark. Like one of the Clark boys. In the outfield, you got...
Chet Lemon?
Kirk Gibson?
Oh, yeah. Kirk Gibson, of course. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and that's about it. Then it starts to go like...
Sparky Anderson?
Yeah, he was the coach. Yeah, then you start going, jeez, who had some of the Tigers of the... was there a Reardon? I think I feel like there was a Reardon.
Well, we went to... I think I told you this. When we went to the... We went to a museum when we were in Detroit, and we were just, like, looking through the exhibit, and it turned out to be, like, an exhibit that was, like, highlighting Detroit baseball. So I spent a lot of time just, like, watching a television set showing the 1984 World Series.
And Molly's like, what are you doing? Let's go. Yeah. You're like, 1 second. I want to see what happens in the ALCS. They didn't have those back then, but yeah.
But going back to the White Sox and 90 wins.
90 losses.
Or 90 losses, excuse me.
Not getting ahead of ourselves, yeah.
Like, next year, you can say, like, oh, yeah, Sox, what'd they do last year? And you're like, oh, you know, they lost, like, 88 games. You can say the same thing about the Cubs. Hey, what did the Cubs do last year? Yeah, I think they lost, like, 80-something games. Because there's a chance that the Cubs will lose 80 games this year.
Yeah, oh, my gosh. Can you even believe that? That blows my mind that would even be a chance. I don't even know what the score they're losing now. Or tied up or something like that. But you're right. But you brought this up to my attention that the 2014 Chicago Cubs, the year before they went on that streak and we thought they were going to the World Series that year before the Mets tripped them up, 2015, they were 73-89.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Junior Lake Cubs of 2014. Maybe like a, I feel like who was playing third, like a Val Bueno?
Something like that, yeah.
But the idea being that there's been so much about the parallels between the Cubs rebuild and the Sox rebuild. Well, what did the Cubs do? They were able to get John Lester. They were able to get this reclamation project and Jake Arrieta. But it seems like the Sox follow that same idea in the free agency. They can get their John Lester, which might be Madison Bumgarner. You know, he's got the hair for it. He could be the left-hand long hair guy. And then Kopech could be the right-hand long hair guy, right?
I'm excited about this guys. Team.
And think about it. They could be the new Bash Brothers. You get Bumgarner and Kopech, and they could do surfboards and dirt bikes, and they could sit. They have a poster where they're right next to each other, and they're just says, long hairs win ball, winning ugly, winning pretty. Oh, did I do it?
This is on the record, right?
This nobody is can on steal the us. Record. You cannot steal it.
Winning pretty.
So Jennings, I'm watching you. You cannot
so
steal
beautiful.
This.
What?
Winning pretty.
I'm looking at something entirely different.
Winning pretty. The 2020 Chicago White Sox.
That's so great.
Yeah, and there's a little bit more pretty on that team.
Next year wouldn't be any sort of anniversary of the 1983. The winning
yeah. Winning pretty.
Oh, I love it.
We just fell on that.
What, no winning ugly?
No, it's the idea. It's a play. That's a play. Where you been, Jennings? What's the play on it? The play is they were winning ugly, but then you get Kopech and you get a Madison Bumgarner, and they got their flowing long hair pitchers, and you do the poster, they're back-to-back, maybe they got no shirts on, and they got a surfboard and a dirt bike, and it says, winning pretty, Chicago White Sox 2020. Boom!
Okay.
Man, I need to call up the Sox tomorrow and be like, you looking for some marketing help? I might have just saved the day. Just think about all the placards we could post up on all the post-no-bills all over town. Into something. That's 720, 312-981-7200. A lot of text tonight. One says the stream is down. Pete, can you get upstairs on the roof? That's what they ask you. Can you just go up on the roof? Check the stream. It would be a great video. We go up there and take a picture of you getting up on the roof in this terrible weather, trying to rattle a couple of wires with a wrench. That would be great. I wish I was the kind of show like a Steve Dahl or something that would make you do that. You know, like some sort of bully type host who's like, come on, now the next bid list. And we had an intern and we gave him a funny name. And we made them go out on the roof. I had a friend who lived in Marina Towers. In those beautiful buildings. And he had an apartment that was really high up, like in the 40th floor or something like that. And it's funny, you go into those and they're, if you've ever been inside those, that mid-modern architecture style, they also were almost pie-shaped, the apartments, because it's the circular corncob Wilco buildings there. And he's like, yeah, there's access to the roof. And you're like, oh, cool. You know, you got your wine cooler in your hand. You're like, this is a great idea. It's like, yeah, let's go up. So we take the elevator up to the top, and then you walk out there on the top of the Marina Towers roof. And it is not, it's not like one of these sun decks. It's not like, you know, the cool new condo buildings where they're like, come on out and sit at your communal couch next to the pool. It was just a straight slab of concrete and no protective railing, nothing. And I was just like, and it was kind of windy, not like tonight, but it was, you know, you could tell there was some sort of like wind storm kind of coming through. And I was like, I ain't going out there. Like, the vibe was that was not the kind of rooftop experience that, you know, everyone gets in 2019. This is a couple of years
ago. You had to put a shoe in the door because it couldn't lock behind you or else you'd be trapped up there.
Your flannel shirt that you had hanging off just whipping in the wind. Oh, thanks, man. But yeah, tonight is a tough night. The lightning has stopped downtown, so I'm not sure if that means that the weather's moving forward. I can still see kind of the glare off of Michigan Avenue when it comes to how wet it is. So I'm not sure if it's still an active wet or if it's moved through. But I know that there still is weather in the area, and we're paying attention to it. David's got you covered on any news you have to have, of course, and we're paying attention to flooding. And I would assume that the news crews tonight at WGN TV are working overtime, so check them out. They're probably on right now talking about the flooding and the impact of the severe weather on the Chicago area and downstate. You know, you think about, sometimes you get a little tunnel vision, but when you think about central Illinois and Peoria today, had a tremendous amount of severe weather, including tornado watches and warnings. But that's an area that you always have to pay attention to, is some of this severe weather, especially in the fall, in the spring, come through. Was it right around this time? I feel like maybe October, maybe a little bit later, when they had to evacuate Soldier Field during that Bears game a couple years ago. Wasn't that like
I think it was down in Washington, Illinois, the big tornado that hit down there. Yeah.
That was a fall. That was like maybe a little later into the fall. But it feels like that's obviously because the Bears were playing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All I can remember about that experience was not watching the game, because it was one of those Bears years that you already didn't care. I guess, was it a Trestman year? Might have been a Trestman year.
I think so.
Yeah, it was just already, you're just already over Brandon Marshall and Jay Cutler. You know what I mean? You're just like, I'm going to do something else today. Go apple picking and avoid Soldier Field.
I know a lot of people were, you know, the Bears game is on, they want to watch the Bears game, and the weather, whoever the CBS Megan Mowicki, or no, she's a sports person, whoever Channel 2 weather person was interrupting the game.
Right.
And I know a lot of people were like very upset that the Bears game was being preempted, even though they're trying to save your life.
Yeah. Here's important information for you. Get out of the way. I want to see what the scroll is for the other games. It's not even blocking the game. That's what kills me about that, especially when it scrolls across. It's blocking another scroll. And if you watch football enough on a Sunday, you just get so nauseous of the constant scroll of every stat and every score and every player's... I don't even know all of their details.
Yeah, I found myself actually rewinding to look at like how many points does Zach Ertz have as a tight end?
The thing that
even though it's going to come around in
and it also
minutes.
Is, and, you know, we talked about how great, and I think it was probably an authentic mistake that earlier in the show we were talking about the Masked Singer using the internet in the best way possible, maybe in TV history. And because it wasn't planned and it wasn't contrived, it wasn't go to www. If you go here, you know, check this website out, like at every segment, or didn't scroll at the bottom. It's just people using Google to say, well, who was it? Using clues to try and figure out, be a sleuth, be Sherlock Holmes on if it is or if it's not Tommy Chong. But, it, you know, there's something to be said about the NFL is a good example of, I think, a product that doesn't recognize how to use the internet. There are so many products out there that are tracking every single stat and every single moment that there really isn't a necessary need for that scroll. For them to take as long as they take on the NFL broadcast of Fox or NBC or whatever it is at the bottom where they scroll every stat imaginable and they do it in kind of a as slow of a pace as a scroll is, you already have that information at your fingertips.
Yeah.
And most people, if you watch a football game today, are watching it with multiple devices. I get, like I said, I've gone over to my brother's house, and he'll have his roommate Peter's over there and other people. And they got laptops are up, phones are out. There's seven different sources and sites lit up. This is not about even the TV. We're watching the Red Zone. There's no actual source material. The source material is the byproduct.
Yeah.
I got to figure that out on Sunday because, you know, I mentioned this the other night that I'm having this difficult situation because I used to text back and forth to my brother when he lived in California, and I was real sad. And, you know, I'd always be like, oh, man, I got no one to watch the Bears with. And, you know, I'd watch it with my wife and my son, and my son would find no interest in it and go do something else, and my wife would ultimately take a nap on the couch. And then it'd be like a late game, and there'd be a big play, and it'd be like, yes! And she'd get up and get mad. Like, how dare you? Why are you screaming at the TV? I'm napping. Like, go somewhere else than that. Like, I felt like I was almost in, like, football prison. So my brother moves back to Chicago, and I'm like, oh, this is great. I'll go over to his house on Sundays and have a couple beers and watch a Bears game, and this will be just like when we were kids, right? Sense the beers.
Your wife and son also happy.
Yeah, right. They don't have to fake. Right, they don't have to fake like they have to watch this game. But then he's like, I don't want to watch the Bears because he's in California. In California, he didn't get Bears games. He just got the Red Zone channel, the NFL Network, and he just watched Red Zone. Because you can just watch all the scoring plays over and over and over. It's a great broadcast and one of the best inventions in television history. I'm not putting down Red Zone Channel. But I have a real love for watching a full Bears game.
Yeah.
All of the goofy stuff, showing the deep dish pizzas when they come back from the
right.
break.
Yeah.
The dumb commercials in between, the little pieces where they go, you can't say enough about Danny Trevathan.
Yeah.
All that kind of stuff. The telestrator, the third and eights. The third and eights in midfield. Love the third and eights in midfield. And the defensive stops, the second down running stuff, all that kind of stuff that does not show up on a show like Red Zone. And so my brother was like, well, we're watching Red Zone at the house. That's what everybody here wants. So you're just going to have to deal with it. I'm like, ugh. So I have a decision to make, which is, I pressed my case. I pulled out the card. Hey, you know, I got to do the Monday evening quarterback. You know, with Adam Hook, I got to watch the whole game. So I like ruined the whole party to kick Red Zone off the TV. But I don't know if that's going to hold.
I know you mentioned this too. Maybe you mentioned this on a Lower Wacker Live where the game's at 3:25 this week.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not as many.
That's the hope.
There's
that
only
won't
like
be
four other games or something, maybe. Something like that, a little less.
It'll be harder at 12 noon where they're showing every Indianapolis Colts game, every Tennessee Titans play. You have to, now we're going out to, you know, the Raiders and the Lions. And you're like, no, don't go to the Raiders and the Lions. Nobody needs that. Yeah, so, but I'm still pressing my case because I do think that a 3 o'clock Bears-Vikings game is the best option to watch the whole thing.
I think you have to figure out where, I think you watch the Bears game on the main TV and any secondary device
can cover
the Red Zone channel.
Yeah, it just doesn't work that way. Luckily, the Cubs are out of it, too, because the last time I was over there, we were watching Cubs-Cardinals, too.
Yeah.
Like, just flipping around and stuff like that. Or Cubs, or whatever the series was at the time. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know the answer in this one. So I have to make it. It's a tough decision. Do I go and, you know, do the Red Zone channel with the Buds?
Nah, I don't know.
Or
it's a big game for the Bears.
Right. Or do I stay at home and, you know, have the wife nap on the couch and quietly cheer for my third and eights at midfield. No, I think I can win the argument. Just be like, it's Chicago. I'll just get mean. I'll get mean about it. It's Chicago. We watch Bears games. You don't like it? Get out of your own apartment. I'm taking over.
I mean, I suppose you can just go to a bar.
Yeah, this is the worst way to watch a game. Because then you don't even get the announcers and stuff. They barely even show that stuff. Although I like the bars where when they go to commercials, they have a DJ.
Yeah.
The best.
Yeah.
That's the best.
They put the sound up for the game, and then as soon as the first commercial comes on, there's 3 minutes of dance music.
Yeah, I'm like, does this guy get paid for this? I hope this guy gets paid for this to be like perfect, because it's got to be perfect. You got to have the fade out to come back. And that's a good gig if you can get it. All right, we'll take our last break here on Extension 720. John Hansen coming up at 10 o'clock. Stay with us. All right, so coming up this week here on Extension 720, we start after the weekend on Monday night. After Andre and the reporters, Extension 720 will be on. And Adam Hoag will join us for the Monday evening quarterback. And then we're going to talk with Kevin Colville about his new book on gentrification, which is really interesting. It's a book of poems about, which I am so excited about. It's about Wicker Park in the 90s. He lived in Wicker Park in the 90s, and he's written a collection of poems and a book that is all about his experience. And he, different characters that lived on his block, but all the issues and of gentrification, of course, but also just some of the nostalgia for some of us that lived in Chicago in the 90s and had a chance to go hang out in good old Wicker Park at the Urbis Orbis. There's a poem for you. I remember, I have a funny story. So when I was at Columbia College, this would be, Pete, 1994-ish. And I was living in Roscoe Village. So I didn't have a dorm experience. They didn't have dorms yet at Columbia College, which is an art school down in the South Loop. Entirely different experience to anyone who goes to Columbia College now. It was a different time, 25 years ago. But I remember that, you know, you meet people in class and they would call you. There were no texting. There was no email. So it was just like you'd get a call on you just have to sit by your landline and wait, you know. Or maybe you then came 1010-321. Or then you could, like, you could call and you could check your answer machine from the payphone, all that kind of stuff. Anyway, I digress. I remember I got invited to Wicker Park in probably, like I said, midnight. It's exactly what Kevin's writing about. And it was a loft party. Right, so it's like all students, and you, yeah. And it was a different neighborhood. It wasn't as booming as it is now. There were just, and I remember going into this building, and it was like a warehouse type vibe. You could hear the music pumping off the thing. It was like my first city party, you know. And it was a winter party, and everyone like just throws their jackets in a pile, you know. And then, you know, my green and yellow jacket or whatever I had at the time.
Don't say that.
Yeah, it wasn't never. Packer, but yeah. it was definitely a like a Walmart vibe. You know, coming from Wonder Lake into the city, I'm like, oh, I still got my winter jacket from high school. So anyway, I go in there. It's so great. You're going from room to room. You're just like, what an experience. It's multicultural. Like, just so much going on. You know, hip-hop bouncing off the walls. You're like, this is what I'm talking about. This is what I'm talking about. We go to leave. I grab my jacket. I'm like, oh, someone stole my glasses. Like my eyeglasses, because dorky Justin's like, I've got my glasses just in case, and I'll put them in the case, and I'll put them in the pocket. And everyone in the room was complaining about, oh, no, so people ransacked the jackets. And so everyone around was like, oh, my thing is gone, or my wallet's gone, or my money's gone, whatever. Mine's like, my glasses. He stole my glasses. You know, and I'm like 18 or something, so I had to, the next day, I had to call my parents like, yeah, I got my glasses stolen at a house party in Wicker Park. Can I go back to Lens Crafter or whatever? Just before Warby Parker, right? Yeah, before the owl on TV that you go buy glasses for $20. This was like a huge, you cannot break these. You cannot lose these. These are really important glasses. And here I am losing them at my first Wicker Park house party, which Kevin Colville writes about. He's probably the guy who stole my glasses.
Yeah.
I should ask him about my glasses on Monday. So that's coming up. And also a little bit later in the week, we're going to talk with Jeannie Gaffigan, who is Jim Gaffigan's wife, who had she's directed all his TV shows, his stand-ups. She's sort of a co-writer for him. And she was diagnosed just recently, a couple years back, with a brain tumor. And she's written a book about that experience and about how sudden and chaotic their life became when she really, who was the caregiver to her family, the sort of matriarch and the person who kept the schedules and organized everything, and they worked at such a breakneck speed, had to rethink their lives when given a diagnosis that essentially was like, you have days to live.
My wife and I always kind of talk about this stuff where it's the little things. Like, I'm like, boy, man, if like my wife died, where does she get the dog food? You know, I think a box comes every couple of weeks. Where is that box? Is that Chewy? You know, yeah. Like just the little things,
right,
like
little
that.
Things, right.
That I always that think, she just always. I don't even, you know, I don't even think about it.
I always think, will the prophecy come true that the house will get messy? You know, because it takes about 2 days, maybe a day, not even a day, that's hours. If I leave a glass by the kitchen sink, that there'll be a follow-up that is like, hey, you going to clean that glass? And I was like, and I'm like, now, have I been trained? If my wife is gone, will the prophecy come true? Will I just leave that glass there for weeks on weeks because nobody told me to clean it?
Yeah, you will.
And will it just become everything that she worries it's going to become, where it just become a festering pit?
Yeah, it will
of
be.
Garbage and messiness. Or will I adapt and be like, I should clean that glass? That's what I think about.
You will become a slob.
Let's see. That's the worry.
I had 3 years of newspapers stacked up in my apartment at some point before my wife moved in.
Wait, yep. Why?
Yeah, why?
I don't mean to jump in here early,
what,
Justin.
What were you keeping them for?
I love old newspapers like
in
anyone.
In case I had to go back? I don't know. Like, no, I'm a hoarder.
Like, okay, well, that's what I was going at. Yeah. I just wanted you to say it
were
before
you,
I did.
Was
yeah.
this pre-internet? Were you, was this like an archival situation?
No, it was like 8 years ago.
Like, I get it when, like, a big event happens. Like, I have the Cubs when they won the World Series.
I got the Bill Clinton, Monica Lewinsky impeachment headline.
The feel of paper.
So you just
you've got,
the
like,
feeling of our lives.
December 3rd, 2002.
Yeah. Let's see what Sneed wrote about.
Yeah. Alderman Burke called for this motion in city council today.
Wow. Wow.
But they're gone now.
They are gone.
That was a little hesitation there.
Well, a lot of them are being used for the Christmas decorations, wrapping up Christmas decorations.
Yeah, 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 right.
So it's fun to go every Christmas.
That was the plan all along, right.
You know, I have a lot of old red eyes and red streaks.
Wow.
This is awesome.
Yeah.
It's going to pay off one day.
I feel like we're really getting into who Pete is on this one. John Hanson's in next. What's up, buddy?
Hey,
how are you?
By the way, I'm with you on the 90 Lost thing.
Yeah.
And I had looked it up because I was almost certain about the 2014 thing that I thought heard you guys talking about with the Cubs. I think that's a big number, too. I think it matters. I don't know.
I think so, too. It's psychological.
Yeah, I don't know if it's more of a fan thing, but if you're going to be like the Sox are, keeping a lot of these young players and they're carrying it over. That was Joe Maddon's message a lot when he took over for the team in 2015, and I know the front office was excited about not getting that 90 loss total, no matter how symbolic it is, which it was. But yeah, it's about a momentum
so the
thing.
Losing,
it carries over.
Yeah, exactly. So in a way, I mean, it's a asterisk, but the idea that they're postponing one of the two games today and it will not be played, that's a win for the Sox.
Hey, hope for rain tomorrow. Let's just get the rest of them out. End with 88 losses. That's fine by me.